Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. In today's episode we are reading, first we're talking about The Brothers Karamazov, Book 9, Chapter 2, and then we'll be reading Chapter 3. The questions that I asked you guys were, so, we now know what happened. How closely does that line up with what you had imagined? And get your speculations in now. What will be the fate of Mitya? I am Norwegian, came to the rescue, saying, I'm writing up the new characters here. I'm terrible with names. Thank you. Chief of police is Mikhail Makarovich Makarov. The public prosecutor is Ippolit Kirillovich. Both of them are described as either being kind or having good hearts. Now that's rare in these kinds of stories. And the investigative magistrate is Nikolai Parfenovich Nelyarov. The door at Fyodor's was open, a door which even Grigory didn't have a key to. Would Dmitri have had this key? Probably not. Smerdy, however, was acting as Fyodor's eyes and ears while he was pacing his room in expectation of Grushenka. I still don't know if his current fits are real. He did say to Ivan that he could fake them as convenient, and that he would be faking them this night as to keep Dmitri off his back. Speculations for Mitch's fate. He looks guilty as sin, I expect. The investigative magistrate will decide that there should be a trial, and then I expect the public prosecutor to have an easy time putting Dmitri away. He might have be going to Siberia after all, but not to mine for gold. Mitya will likely be blamed, said Henry Loz 70, but it looks like Smerdy has a lot to hide. I am loving the story. Alright. Oh, I'm keen to see what happens next. I think we're going to do a very short discussion today. And let's just move straight through and read chapter 3. I need to know what's going to happen here. Alright, chapter 3 is called The Sufferings of a Soul. The First Ordeal. And so Mitya sat looking wildly at the people around him, not understanding what was said to him. Suddenly he got up, flung up his hands and shouted aloud, I'm not guilty, I'm not guilty of that blood, I'm not guilty of my father's blood. I meant to kill him, but I'm not guilty, not I. But he had hardly said this before Grushenka rushed from behind the curtain and flung herself at the police captain's feet. It was my fault, mine, my wickedness, she cried, in a heart-rending voice, bathed in tears, stretching out her clasped hands towards them. He did it through me. I tortured him and drove him to it. I tortured that poor old man that's dead, too, in my wickedness, and brought him to this. It's my fault, mine first, mine most, my fault. Yes, it is your fault. You're the chief criminal, you fury, you harlot. You're the most to blame, shouted the police captain, threatening her with his hand. But he was quickly and resolutely suppressed. The prosecutor positively seized hold of him. This is absolutely irregular, Mikhail Makarovich, he cried. You're positively hindering the inquiry. You're ruining the case, he almost gasped. Follow the regular course, cried Nikolai Parfenovich, fearfully excited too. Otherwise it's absolutely impossible. Judge us together, Grushenka cried frantically, still kneeling. Punish us together. I will go with him now, if it's to death. Grushenka, my life, my blood, my holy one. Mitya fell on his knees beside her and held her tight in his arms. Don't believe her, he cried. She's not guilty of anything, of any blood, of anything. He remembered afterwards that he was forcibly dragged away from her by several men, and that she was led out, and that when he recovered himself, he was sitting at the table. Beside him and behind him stood the men with metal plates. Facing him on the other side of the table sat Nikolai Parfenovich, the investigating lawyer. He kept persuading him to drink a little water out of a glass and that stood on the table. That will refresh you. That will calm you. Be calm, don't be frightened, he added, extremely politely. Mitya, he remembered it afterwards, became suddenly intensely interested in his big rings, one with an amethyst and another with a transparent bright yellow stone of great brilliance. And long afterwards he remembered with wonder how those rings had riveted his attention through all those terrible hours of interrogation, so that he was utterly unable to tear himself away from them and dismiss them as things that had nothing to do with his position. On Mitch's left side, in the place where Maximov had been sitting at the beginning of the evening, the prosecutor was now seated, and on Mitch's right hand, where Grushenka had been, was a rosy-cheeked young man in a sort of shabby hunting jacket, with ink and paper before him. This was the secretary of the investigating lawyer, who had brought him with him. The police captain was now standing by the window at the other end of the room, beside Kalganov, who was sitting there. "Drink some water," said the investigating lawyer softly, for the tenth time. "I have drunk it, gentlemen, I have. But come, gentlemen, crush me, punish me, decide my fate," cried Mitya, staring with terribly fixed wide eyes at the investigating lawyer. "So, you positively declare that you are not guilty of the death of your father, Fyodor Pavlovich?" asked the investigating lawyer, softly but insistently. "I am not guilty. I am guilty of the blood of another man, but not of my father's, and I weep for it. I killed the old man and knocked him down, but it's hard to answer for that murder with another, a terrible murder of which I am not guilty. It's a terrible accusation, gentlemen, a knock-down blow. But who has killed my father? Who has killed him? Who can have killed him, if I didn't? It's marvellous, extraordinary, impossible." "Yes, who can have killed him?" the investigating lawyer was beginning, but Ippolit Kirillovich, the prosecutor, glancing at him, addressed Mitya. "You need not worry about the old servant, Grigory Vasilievich. He is alive, he has recovered, and in spite of the terrible blows inflicted, according to his own and your evidence, by you, there seems no doubt that he will live, so the doctors say, at least." "Alive? He's alive?" cried Mitya, flinging up his hands. His face beamed. "Lord, I thank thee for the miracle thou hast wrought for me, a sinner and evil-doer. That's an answer to my prayer. I've been praying all night," and he crossed himself three times. He was almost breathless. "So from this, Grigory, we have received such important evidence concerning you that..." The prosecutor would have continued, but Mitya suddenly jumped up from his chair. "One minute, gentlemen, for God's sake, 1 minute, I will run to her." "Excuse me, at this moment it's quite impossible," Nikolai Parfenovich almost shrieked. He too leapt to his feet. Mitya was seized by the men with the metal plates, and he sat down of his own accord. "Gentlemen, what a pity. I wanted to see her for 1 minute only. I wanted to tell her that it has been washed away, it has gone, that the blood that was weighing on my heart all night, and that I am not a murderer now. Gentlemen, she is my betrothed," he said ecstatically, and reverently, looking round at them all. "Oh, thank you, gentlemen. Oh, in 1 minute you have given me new life, new heart. That old man used to carry me in his arms, gentlemen. He used to wash me in the tub when I was a baby, 3 years old, abandoned by everyone who was like a father to me. And so you," the investigating lawyer began. "Allow me, gentlemen, allow me 1 minute more," interposed Mitya, putting his elbows on the table and covering his face with his hands. "Let me have a moment to think. Let me breathe, gentlemen. All this is horribly upsetting. Horribly. A man is not a drum, gentlemen." "Drink a little more water," murmured Nikolai Parfenovich. Mitya took his hands from his face and laughed. His eyes were confident. He seemed completely transformed in a moment. His whole bearing was changed. He was once more the equal of these men, with all of whom he was acquainted, as though they had all met the day before, when nothing had happened at some social gathering. We may note in passing that on his first arrival Mitya had been made very welcome at the police captain's, but later, during the last month especially, Mitya had hardly called at all, and when the police captain met him in the street, for instance, Mitya noticed that he frowned and only bowed his head of politeness. His acquaintance with the prosecutor was less intimate, though he sometimes paid his wife, a nervous and fanciful lady, visits of politeness without quite knowing why, and she always received him graciously and had, for some reason, taken an interest in him after the last. He had not had time to get to know the investigating lawyer, though he had met him and talked to him twice, each time about the fair sex. "You are a most skilful lawyer, I see, Nikolai Parfenovich," cried Mitya, laughing gaily. "But I can help you now." "Oh, gentlemen, I feel like a new man, and don't be offended at my addressing you so simply and directly. I'm rather drunk, too. I'll tell you that frankly. I believe I've had the honour and pleasure of meeting you, Nikolai Parfenovitch, at my kinsman Musov's. Gentlemen, gentlemen, I don't pretend to be on equal terms with you. I understand, of course, in what character I am sitting here before you. Oh, of course, there's a horrible suspicion hanging over me. If Grigory has given evidence, a horrible suspicion. It's awful, awful, I understand that. But to business, gentlemen, I am ready, and we will make an end of it in one moment, for listen, listen, gentlemen, since I know I'm innocent, we can put an end to it in a minute, can't we, can't we? Mitchell spoke much and quickly, nervously and effusively, as though he positively took his listeners to be his best friends. So for the present, we will write that you absolutely deny the charge brought against you, said Nikolai Parfenovitch impressively, and bending down to the secretary, and he dictated to him an undertone of what to write. Write it down. You want to write that down? Well, write it. I consent. I give my full consent, gentlemen. Only do you see? Stay, stay, write this. Of disorderly conduct I am guilty, of violence on a poor old man I am guilty, and there is something else at the bottom of my heart of which I am guilty too, but that you need not write down. He suddenly turned to the secretary. That's my personal life, gentlemen. That doesn't concern you, the bottom of my heart, that's to say. But of the murder of my father I am not guilty. That's a wild idea. It's quite a wild idea. I will prove you that you will be convinced directly. You will laugh, gentlemen. You'll laugh yourselves at your suspicion. Be calm, Dmitri Fyodorovitch, said the investigating lawyer, evidently trying to allay Mitch's excitement by his own composure. Before we go on with the inquiry, I should like, if you will consent to answer, to hear you confirm that statement that you disliked your father, Fyodor Pavlovitch, that you were involved in continual disputes with him. Here, at least, a quarter of an hour ago, you exclaimed that you wanted to kill him. I didn't kill him, you said, but I wanted to kill him. Did I exclaim that? Ach, that may be so, gentlemen. Yes, unhappily. I did want to kill him. Many times I wanted to. Unhappily, unhappily. You wanted to. Would you consent to explain that what motives precisely led you to such a sentiment of hatred for your parent? What is there to explain, gentlemen? Mitch shrugged his shoulders sullenly, looking down. I have never concealed my feelings. All the town knows about it. Everyone knows in the tavern. Only lately I declare them in Father Zossima's cell. And the very same day, in the evening, I beat my father. I nearly killed him. And I swore I'd come again and kill him before witnesses. Oh, 1,000 witnesses. I've been shouting it aloud for the last month. Anyone can tell you that. The fact stares you in the face. It speaks for itself.
Excuse me.
It cries aloud. But feelings, gentlemen, feelings are another matter. You see, gentlemen, Mitchell frowned. It seemed to me that about feelings, you have no right to question me. I know that you are bound by your office, I quite understand that, but that's my affair, my private intimate affair, yet since I haven't concealed my feelings in the past, in the tavern for instance, I've talked to everyone, so I won't make a secret of it now. You see, I understand, gentlemen, that there are terrible facts against me in this business. I told everyone that I'd kill him, and now, all of a sudden, he's been killed, so it must have been me. Haha, I can make allowances for you, gentlemen, I can quite make allowances. I'm struck of all a heap myself for who can have murdered him, if not I. That's what it comes to, isn't it? If not I, who can it be? Who? Gentlemen, I want to know. I insist on knowing, he exclaimed suddenly. Where was he murdered? How was he murdered? How and with what? Tell me, he asked quickly, looking at the two lawyers. We found him in his study, lying on his back on the floor, with his head battered in, said the prosecutor. That's horrible, Mitch shuddered, and putting his elbows on his table, hid his face in his right hand. We will continue, interposed Nikolai Parfenovitch. So what was it that impelled you to this sentiment of hatred? You have asserted in public, I believe, that it was based upon jealousy. Well, yes, jealousy. Not only jealousy. Disputes about money. Yes, about money too. There was a dispute about 3,000 rubles, I think, which you claimed as part of your inheritance. 3,000 more, cried Mitya, hotly. More than 6,000, more than 10, perhaps. I told everyone so, shouted it at them, but I made up my mind to let it go at the 3,000. I was desperate desperately in need of that 3,000, so the bundle of notes for 3,000 that I knew he kept under his pillow, ready for Grushenka, I considered as simply stolen from me. Yes, gentlemen, I looked upon it as mine, as my own property. The prosecutor looked significantly at the investigating lawyer, and he had time to wink at him on the sly. We will return to that subject later, said the lawyer promptly. You will allow us to note the point and write it down that you looked upon that money as your own property. Write it down by all means. I know that's another fact that tells against me, but I am not afraid of facts and I tell them against myself. Do you hear? Do you know, gentlemen, you take me for a different sort of man from what I am, he added, suddenly gloomy and dejected. You have to deal with a man of honour, a man of the highest honour. Above all, don't lose sight of it. A man who's done a lot of nasty things, but has always been and still is honourable at the bottom. He's in a being. I don't know how to express it. That's just what made me wretched all my life. That I yearned to be honourable. That I was, so to say, a martyr to a sense of honour, seeking for it with a lantern, with the lantern of Diogenes. And yet all my life I've been doing filthy things like all of us, gentlemen. That is like me alone. That was my mistake, like me alone, gentlemen, my head aches. His brow contracted with pain. You see, gentlemen, I couldn't bear to look at him. There was something in his ignoble, impudent, trampling on everything sacred, something sneering and irrelevant, loathsome, loathsome. But now that he's dead, I can feel differently. How do you mean? I don't feel differently, but I wish I hadn't hated him so. You feel penitent. No, not penitent. Don't write that. I'm not much good myself. I'm not very beautiful, so I had to write to consider him repulsive. That's what I mean. Write that down if you like. Saying this, Mitchell became very mournful. He had grown more and more gloomy as the inquiry continued. At that moment, another unexpected scene followed. Though Grushenka had been removed, she had not been taken far away, only into the next room, but one from the blue room in which the examination was proceeding. It was a little room with one window next beyond the large room in which they had danced and feasted on lavishly. She was sitting there with no one by her but Maximov, who was terribly depressed, terribly scared, and clung to her side as though for security. At their door stood one of the peasants with a metal plate on his breast. Grushenka was crying, and suddenly her grief was too much for her. She jumped up, flung her arms, and with a loud wail of sorrow rushed out of the room to him, to her Mitya, and so unexpectedly that they had not time to stop her. Mitya, hearing her cry tremble, jumped up and with a yell rushed impetuously to meet her, not knowing what he was doing. But they were not allowed to come together, though they saw one another. He was seized by the arms. He struggled and tried to tear himself away. It took 3 or 4 men to hold him. She was seized too, and he saw her stretching out her arms to him, crying aloud as they carried her away. When the scene was over, he came to himself again, sitting in the same place as before, opposite the investigating lawyer, and crying out to them, "What do you want with her? Why do you torment her? She's done nothing, nothing." The lawyer tried to soothe him. About 10 minutes passed like this. At last Mihail Makarovich, who had been absent, came hurriedly into the room and said in a loud and excited voice to the prosecutor, "She's been removed. She's downstairs. Will you allow me to say one word to this unhappy man, gentlemen? In your presence, gentlemen, in your presence." "By all means, Mihail Makarovich," answered the investigating lawyer. "In the present case, we have nothing against it." "Listen, Dmitri Fyodorovich, my dear fellow," began the police captain, and there was a look of warm, almost fatherly feeling for the luckless prisoner on his excited face. "I took your Agrafena Alexandrovna downstairs myself and confided her to the care of the landlord's daughters, and that old fellow Maximov is with her all the time. And I soothed her, do you hear? I soothed and calmed her. I impressed on her that you have to clear yourself, so she mustn't hinder you, must not depress you, or you may lose your head and say that wrong thing in your evidence. In fact, I talked to her, and she understood. She's a sensible girl. My boy, a good-hearted girl, she would have kissed my old hands, begging for you. She sent me herself to tell you not to worry about her, and I must go, my dear fellow. I must go and tell her that you are calm and comforted about her. And so you must be calm, do you understand? I was unfair to her. She is a Christian soul, gentlemen. Yes, I tell you, she's a gentle soul, and not to blame for anything. So what am I to tell her, Dmitri Fyodorovitch? Will you sit quiet or not? The good-natured police captain said a great deal that was irregular, but Grushenka's suffering, a fellow creature's suffering, touched his good-natured heart, and tears stood in his eyes. Mitya jumped up and rushed forwards. "Forgive me, gentlemen. Oh, allow me, allow me," he cried. "You have the heart of an angel. An angel, Mikhail Makarovich. I thank you for her. I will be calm, cheerful, in fact. Tell her in the kindness of your heart that I am cheerful, quite cheerful, that I shall be laughing in a minute, knowing that she has a guardian angel like you. I shall have done with all this directly, and as soon as I am free, I'll be with her. She'll see. Let her wait. Gentlemen," he said, turning to the two lawyers, "now I'll open my whole soul to you. I'll pour out everything. We'll finish this off directly, finish it off gaily. We shall laugh at it in the end, shan't we? But, gentlemen, that woman is the queen of my heart. Oh, let me tell you that. That one thing I'll tell you now. I see I am the honourable man. She is my light. She is the holy one. And if only you knew. Did you hear her cry? I'll go to death with you. And what have I, a penniless beggar, done for her? Why such love for me? How can a clumsy, ugly brute like me, with my ugly face, deserve such love? That she is ready to go to exile with me. And how she fell down at your feet for my sake just now. And yet she's proud and has done nothing. How can I help adoring her? How can I help crying out and rushing to her as I did just now? Gentlemen, forgive me. But now I am comforted." And he sank back in his chair, and covering his face with his hands, burst into tears, but they were happy tears. He recovered himself instantly. The old police captain seemed much pleased, and the lawyers also. They felt that the examination was passing into a new phase. When the police captain went out, Mitya was positively gay. "Now, gentlemen, I am at your disposal, entirely at your disposal, and if it were not for all these trivial details, we should understand one another in a minute. I am at those details again. I am at your disposal, gentlemen, but I declare that we must have mutual confidence. You in me and I in you, and there will be no end to it. I speak in your interests. The business, to business, gentlemen, to business, and don't rummage in my soul, don't tease me with the trifles, but only ask me about facts and what matters, and I will satisfy you at once, and damn the details." So spoke Mitya. The interrogation began again. All right, there we go. That's the end of chapter 3. Have your say over at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. Thank you for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.